This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Welcome back to another live show on The People Speak. It's Tuesday, July 18th, and I am your hostess, Sophia Ray. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Eastern New York time for live talk radio with guest speakers. For more information, visit bbsradio.com/The People Speak. Here on The People Speak, we encourage listener participation by phoning in questions or comments toll-free in Canada and USA at 1-888-429-5471. Here with me tonight, I have a pair of colleagues from Greenpeace, which is an international nonprofit organization that is in over 40 countries and advocates the protection of the environment and takes nonviolent action to achieve its goals. I have Mary Sweeters and Diana Best. Mary, how are you doing tonight?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. So how did you get involved with the Greenpeace, and what do you do with Greenpeace?
Yeah, so I got involved with Greenpeace about 10 years ago. I have been interested in environmental issues for a long time, since I was a child. And I think, you know, my kind of parents raised me to sort of stand up for what I believe in. And so kind of had that inspiration in me since I was young. And I got involved with Greenpeace because I wanted to work on climate change and realized it was, you know, one of the biggest threats facing our planet. And so, yeah, I got involved as an organizer from the start.
And so your specialties are in?
Sorry?
Your specialties, what issues do you work with at Greenpeace?
Sure. Right now I have been focusing for the last few years of my work on offshore drilling and looking at the influence of the fossil fuel industry in our government, and working to really make sure that the voices of people on the planet are being heard.
Great, great. Diana Best, welcome on to The People Speak. It's great to have you. Can you give us a little background, how you got involved and what your specialties and issues that you are working on or with in Greenpeace?
Definitely. Yeah. Thank you so much for having us both on tonight. It's certainly a pleasure for us to be on your program. I got my start similar to Mary back in 2008. So I've been working with Greenpeace for quite some time. I actually started as a volunteer in the San Francisco office at the end of the Bush administration, mostly because I was really worried about a couple of things. One, the inaction of our country to really deal with or tackle climate change in an aggressive way. And two, the largely illegal leasing of public lands that was happening sort of at the tail end of the Bush administration. So I started volunteering and then quickly thereafter got my first organizing job with Greenpeace in 2008. Since then, I've worked on a handful of issues similar to Mary's story. I was an organizer for a long time on climate policy. I also did a number of state organizing campaigns around Colorado and the region on coal-fired power plants. I then moved on to really focus on federal leasing, in particular coal leasing on federal public lands, and did that work for about the last 5 years. Since Trump took office in January, I've really turned my focus to be on more broader infrastructure fights, in particular pipelines.
Okay, were you involved, and this could go apply to both of you, but I'm going to ask you, Diana, first. Were you involved with the Dakota Access Pipeline?
Yeah, Greenpeace was certainly involved in standing in solidarity with the water protectors at the Dakota Access Pipeline. I'm actually going to pass it to Mary, who can give us a summary of sort of where we participated and how we played a role in that.
Go ahead, Mary. Take it away.
Sure. So as Diana mentioned, Greenpeace, along with many other groups, was working, standing in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and the water protectors who gathered there last year before winter. And what some of our work looked like, we had a few folks at Standing Rock doing some support on the ground at the camp. Some of that, was meant helping to weatherize some of the infrastructure there as the weather got colder. But a lot of what we were doing actually with, Greenpeace members and with our allies across the country was really making sure that we amplified the story of Standing Rock and of the Dakota Access Pipeline. There were a lot of mobilizations across the country that a lot of folks were involved with in solidarity with the tribe. And we also engaged in some of the work around the banks who are funding the pipeline and wanting to kind of call out and hold it to account many of the banks that were financing the project and putting pressure on them to actually pull their funds from the pipeline, because we saw that as a kind of a good pathway to potentially, stopping the pipeline project from proceeding.
Mm-hmm. I had a Ladonna Brable-Allard on, and she's one of the founders of one of the of the camps that were there at Standing Rock. She was hoping, and she was very optimistic, and she had a lot of faith in some success. Now, was her success, her faith, were they met? What's going on out there as of now? Do you know?
Sure. Yeah, you cut out a little bit, but you asked what was happening there now.
Yeah. So is there a success? Like, did the pipeline completely stop, reroute, or? Because I know they didn't want the pipeline going through there. So what's going on there now that the public doesn't really have any knowledge of, that you have knowledge of, perhaps?
The pipeline was unfortunately completed. And actually there were, even before kind of full operation began, there were a few leaks of the pipeline, which just kind of highlights the inherent dangers that the pipelines this pipeline and any other pipelines that are being proposed poses to local communities as well as our climate. But actually right now, I think a lot of the focus has been toward the banks that are funding not only, as I mentioned, this pipeline, but future incoming pipeline projects that are happening. And I'll turn it over to Diana because a lot of her work has been focusing on that. But in terms of where the Dakota Access Pipeline specifically stands right now, there is continued court proceedings and a judge is actually currently deliberating on whether they will find that some of the complaints in the lawsuit that the tribe brought to the company are valid. So we're waiting on that. But I'll turn it over to Diana to talk about
the
financing.
Yeah. And I think there's quite a few lawsuits going on where they find they're going against their rights. Go ahead, Diana, if you can fill in anything that, to what she was saying.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing to note is that the brave water protectors from Standing Rock and the opposition to the Dakota Access Pipeline, I really think that was a pivotal moment that changed the game. One, I think it just showed a lot of the big banks that have financed these projects in the past. So a lot of these pipeline companies don't have the capital up front to be able to build these massive pipeline projects. So what they do is they turn around and ask, the leading Wall Street banks and leading investment banks from around the world to finance either their company or specific projects. So with Dakota Access Pipeline, what we saw was a project-specific loan. So a handful of banks participated in that loan. And what we've seen, because of the courageous, bold action at Standing Rock, we basically saw a lot of banks either respond and say, you know, we're getting out of this, the reputational damage or the reputational risk mm-hmm. of high controversial projects like this isn't worth it. So we've seen a handful of banks actually make commitments, not only to sell their stake in the Dakota Access Pipeline and to get themselves out of that, but also make further commitments on other kind of pending controversial pipelines, for example, the Keystone XL pipeline. So I think I think that was a hugely critical moment and something that makes me optimistic for the future, that these banks are actually starting to feel the reputational risk of their participation in things like this.
Were the worst fears not? I'm just curious if you have any knowledge or information on this. But you said it was completed. Now, was there any leakage? Did a leakage happen? I thought I heard something in the media somewhere back then. Do you have any knowledge of this?
Yeah. So actually, right after I think the pipeline was the construction was completed, there were a few leaks that were reported and documented. And, you know, I think this just goes to show that what the water protectors were opposing and fighting for was the protection of their communities and their inherent right to, you know, safe water source and a clean, healthy mm-hmm. environment, and the inherent risk that these pipelines do pose to communities that they run near, mm-hmm. as well as to our climate, of course, for, you know, when we're burning oil.
Is Greenpeace taking any action about that now out there in Dakota, in North Dakota?
Greenpeace is not currently located or working in North Dakota per se, but we're continuing to monitor you know, we'll continue to act in solidarity with the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and other communities that are, you know, impacted by pipeline projects.
Okay. I kind of want to talk about Trump here a little bit, and he is like a real big deal going on right now, and he's a lot of people are not very happy with him. Especially environment protectors. He did something really silly about having something taken off about the environment. He doesn't believe in climate change. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, I can certainly jump in here. You know, I think Trump's position has waffled over the years. I think the one thing I will say is that he always acts from his own personal interests, and I think this is no exception. I think him leaving the Paris Agreement, I think him waffling on his position on whether or not he believes climate is real is simply an indication of the oil and gas interests behind him that are backing him. And that is just that he's there to serve the interests of the few at the expense of not only this country, but the world. This is a critical time to deal with climate change. The U.S. went from being one of the world's biggest climate leaders to now being an absolute dud. I think the good thing is the rest of the world is moving forward. Renewable energy is becoming increasingly cheaper. We're seeing climate progress despite this man in office. It's still very unfortunate that this isn't taken seriously. This is the consensus of world scientists that something is happening to our climate, that we could be moving into an unlivable climate in the very near future if radical action isn't taken. Now is not the time to hesitate. So it's an unfortunate piece that Trump sort of refuses to acknowledge the reality of this so that he can benefit him and his friends.
Yeah, that's interesting. And you said, you know, that we've gone to a complete dud. What issues are going on today that you're most passionate about right now, Diana, that's, you know, in this area of climate change? What do we need to recognize as far as, you know, as your knowledge goes and your information? What are some suggestions, you know, for environment protectors?
Yeah, this is a great question and one that I'm actually really optimistic about. I think it's a lot of people within the environmental movement have seen some of the moves by the Trump administration as just sort of an attack after an attack after an attack on the environment. I think there's a lot of ways that we can continue to defend the environment. We can slow down some of those attacks and we can even make massive progress. Some of the things I'm really excited about, I think, you know, the opportunity for renewable energy is ever growing. I think it's going to continue to operate even outside the political space for mm-hmm. years to come. I think there's a need for it. There's a want for it. People are recognizing that not only is this good for the climate, but there's also air and water concerns involved with a heavy fossil fuel energy base, heavy fossil fuel electricity, cars, so on and so forth. So I actually think we're going to see a lot of solutions work in the very near future. I also feel really positive about our opportunity to, you know, maximize the risk level and risk perception around these infrastructure projects. I think for a long time, we've operated in a system of status quo where a project wants to get funded, it goes to a handful of banks, those banks, without doing a ton of analysis, just fund those fossil fuel projects, those fossil fuel projects get built. I think, as I've mentioned already on this show, I think the Dakota Access Pipeline really changed the name of the game. I think we're seeing banks a lot more wary to just blindly finance some of these projects. I think protest risk is a really huge thing. Every pipeline around the country now has an active chapter of people that are mobilizing and organizing and bringing together frontline communities and actually standing up and saying, not, this isn't going to happen. We're not going to allow this pipeline to be built. And I think that risk is very real, not only for political decision makers in that area, but also for banks that are financing those projects. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mm-hmm. this is the kind of work that the environmental justice community has been doing for a very, very long time. And it's something that Greenpeace is really proud to stand in solidarity and stand side by side with those communities. But I think those are some of the things that I'm really excited about. Mary, I don't know if you want to add a few to that list.
Sure. I think, you know, we've seen kind of across so many different issues, kind of a groundswell of resistance to some of the things that the Trump administration has thrown our way over the last, you know, 6 months or so of the administration. And I think one thing that is particularly heartening to me is, you know, in my work focuses mostly on offshore drilling. And, you know, we've seen this real groundswell of opposition to offshore drilling when President Trump announced executive orders that would roll back some of the protections of all of our coasts and the protections that were put in place over the last several years. People responded right away. From the Atlantic coast, Pacific coast, we see this up in Alaska, in the Gulf, there's bipartisan opposition to offshore drilling because of the risks that it poses to all the communities along our coast and to our climate. And so I'm really heartened by that. I think people are recognizing that they really need to stand up and get involved, and they are.
Do you think we will have another episode of what happened in the Gulf? With the oil, do you think that's going to happen again if he allows more offshore drilling? I think he has some leasing project plans coming out in, in August? Sorry, I don't have the information right on me. But I know he's got something going on in some off of Texas, Alabama, all of the Gulf, the Gulf states. Are you guys aware of this?
Yeah, so there's a couple things going on. So as I mentioned, the executive orders that came out in April from the administration, those are basically requesting a review of the current protections that protect all of our coasts, including the Gulf of Mexico. So that's looking at marine sanctuaries, marine national monuments that have been designated over the last 20 years, ones that have been expanded recently. These reviews, using the word review to say, we want to take a look at all of these places that are off our coast that are protected, or we want to look at these areas that have been withdrawn from you know, even the possibility of drilling as part of our federal policy. The Trump administration wants to look at these to see if maybe they're impeding expansion of offshore oil and gas drilling. And so this would affect, you know, all of our coasts, but certainly in the Gulf of Mexico, where, you know, we of course have seen one of the biggest environmental disasters in our country's history, there continues to be risk of a major oil spill. In fact, there are places, there's the Taylor oil leak. That's a pipeline that continues to spew oil into the Gulf of Mexico every day, and has not been properly dealt with. And I think what you may have been alluding to was, I believe there is scheduled to be a lease sale for more leasing blocks out in the Gulf of Mexico coming up in August. And so, you know, our government is looking at removing these regulations that have been put in place that would protect our coasts in order to, you know, kind of be able to line the pockets of the fossil fuel friends who are now, some of whom are now in our government.
Let me ask you this. What can people do to support and take action against this leasing sale? How can they reach out and be a supporter to put some type of halt to this offshore drilling? What can we do?
Sure. I think you're breaking up a little bit there, but were you asking what people can do
to take action?
Great. Yeah. For offshore drilling in particular, and I can turn it over to Diana to, offer up some suggestions too for some of the other work that we're doing. But for offshore drilling, there are actually a couple opportunities for folks to weigh in to the federal government. For example, right now, there is a comment period that is open for folks to weigh in about seismic survey testing, which is going on in the Atlantic Ocean. Seismic surveying is the precursor to offshore drilling. Companies will hire seismic survey companies who will go and will blast. It's called seismic air gun blasting, and it's compressed air that gets blasted into the ocean every 10 to 15 seconds for hours at a time for days and weeks on end. And this has significant impacts onto marine wildlife and can actually result in killing marine mammals. And so right now there's a comment period where folks can weigh in opposition to this seismic air gun blasting, both, you know, for the sake of the damage that it may cause the wildlife and the communities along the coast, but then also because it is the precursor to more expanded offshore oil drilling in our oceans. So that's one way that folks can get involved.
Okay, that's interesting. And
there will be many other ways that folks can get involved. I think if you want, people want to plug into Greenpeace's work and stay involved, you can text RESIST, RESIST, to 877-877. And that actually like gets you into kind of the text communication stream from Greenpeace, so folks can stay involved that way. But Diana, I'll turn it over to you too if you have any suggestions.
I actually have a question for Diana. Diana,
oh, great.
And I want to retract a little bit, and I hope I'm not cutting out. I want to retract and ask you. And actually, this is a texting question from Zale Harris out of California, and Zale wants to know: do you have any idea why Trump pulled out of the Paris deal?
Hi, just to repeat back and make sure I'm hearing it correctly. So you're asking why Trump pulled out of the Paris Agreement?
What are your beliefs on why he did?
I mean, I think this is a complicated question. I think at the heart of it is that he just continues to do the bidding of his friends in the oil and gas industry at the expense of not only the American people, but the world at large. I think there's another analysis in here, which is he's just going for optics. So you had a sort of circle around him pushing him to get out of the Paris Agreement you know, because it inhibits oil and gas development, it, you know, potentially puts you on a path to have to take into account the high emissions and sort of fossil fuel dependency we have in our country. And that very much in the optics of it stands in opposition to, you know, his entire agenda, which is built on, you know, more drilling, you know, off any coast, whatever the impact to people, communities, marine animals, you name it, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. We just need to drill. So I think there's that. He also had a other sector of his sort of inner circle that were really pushing for him to stay on. If you recall, a lot of his economic business council, Elon Musk, the sort of owner and engineer behind Tesla and a lot of the electric vehicle technology, was on his business council for the sole purpose of really trying to get him on, you know, on the straight path to staying in Paris, to staying on our sort of climate commitments that we've already made. So why then would he pick one side versus the other? And I really think it comes down to the optics. I think people that spend a lot more time in the DC Beltway probably have other explanations, but in many ways, it's just, can he undo everything that President Obama has put forward just for the sake of it? So I don't know. I think that's a really good question. I think it's one that we're going to continue to pay the price for. I think it's, you know, embarrassing is the word that comes to mind that we are now.
When you say pay the price, how will we be paying that price? Can you give specifics so people are kind of aware?
Sorry, can you repeat that?
Like you say, like paying the price, we kind of are paying the price already, but What specifics can you give, you know, for paying that price to make more people aware of the idea of the impact this has on us all?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of them is just the precious time that we have to actually try and reverse the course that's happening right now and avoid catastrophic climate change or, you know, moving us towards temperature rise that no longer is the comfortable, livable climate we're in right now. So I think that's one. We need to be acting as fast as we can and in the best intentions and coordination with the rest of the world. That isn't happening. I think the second piece, so I think that's one impact. What makes me feel hopeful is that the immediate response from, you know, governors, mayors, states around the country was to say, it doesn't matter if Trump isn't in, we're still committed to doing this. So I think we're already seeing some response there. I think the second piece for me is reputational damage. I think we've went from being really at the table and in a position to help facilitate some of these deals, to help show leadership to the rest of the world that we're committed to bringing this along. We worked really closely with China in particular to kind of bring them to the table. And now China is far and away sort of moving quickly in a direction beyond us. So I think those are some of the impacts how that reputational damage will play out over, you know, the next decade is something we'll have to wait and see.
Okay. I'm going to take us into a quick break here. And then when we come out, I have a couple more questions here and we'll get into anything else that you guys feel is important. Don, will you take us away for the break? We'll just be back after a few moments here.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Belzer. This is the great BBS Radio.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
This land
as your name.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
And we are back on The People Speak. I am your hostess, Sophia Ray, and I'm here with Diana Best and Mary Sweeters, campaigners for Greenpeace. Welcome back, ladies. Great to have you back.
Thanks so much.
Glad to be here.
Okay, great. So, you know, you're talking a little bit about this thing that shoots this energy into the ocean, and I'm getting, like, these HAARP ideas. Is this related to HAARP, and is HAARP really weather-altering, and is that a huge impact on this climate change, possibly?
Well, I think if I understand what you may be alluding to is or referring to is what some folks may know as chemtrails. But we're actually looking at, you know, when we look at climate change, we're looking at the vast, overwhelming evidence, scientific evidence, the scientific community looking at, you know, what has been causing our planet to be warming over the last, you know, several decades. And it's, mm-hmm. you know, very clear that humans are responsible for this because of our burning of fossil fuels and releasing carbon into the atmosphere. And mm-hmm. so I think, you know, as Diana talked about, really a big part of the solution is for countries to come together to take serious action, make serious action plans to curb their emissions. And so in the United States, that translates to making sure that our federal policy doesn't include expanding offshore drilling and opening up these areas, because not only do they have negative impacts, like I was describing around seismic surveying, but of course, when we burn more fossil fuels from offshore drilling or other projects, that's really what's going to get us into trouble. So.
And Diana, is there anything you want to add to that?
I don't think so. I think Mary definitely covered it. Thanks.
Okay. So I want, what it was, chemtrails, yes, I was kind of, HAARP, how do I explain this? I don't even know the entire definition of the acronym of HAARP, but I know it's a machine that uses a lot of energy, and it, they say it's caused, to cause some alter to the weather change. Now, the chemtrails are sprayed into the atmosphere, and you can see them, and they kind of like just, they slowly fall down. And a lot of people have been saying that in those chemtrails are what is called nanotechnology, and that might be going a little bit off topic of the oil and everything that we're talking about here, but it's black goo. I don't know if you guys ever heard of this, and I believe there's a reason why some states also have a banned retaining rainwater. So now I really got off topic here. So you guys don't have any information or knowledge about HAARP besides the chemtrails? Because chemtrail believers interrupt the existence of cloud-seeding programs and research into the climate engineering as evidence for conspiracy. Are you guys familiar with that?
I'm not familiar with HAARP specifically. I thought maybe you were referring to what I'm aware of as for chemtrails. But I think, I guess, just to kind of explain Greenpeace's approach to, you know, how we look at some of our issues, we when we, you know, kind of delve into an issue and try to make a decision on whether or not we're going to work on this issue, campaign on it, and invest a lot of our time and resources, we want to look at some of the clear evidence from, you know, experts on these different issues. And I think for us, you know, we haven't seen the evidence that we would feel comfortable with in terms of saying, okay, this is an issue that we feel is worth kind of putting our time and resources into. So that's where we're on that. I think, you know, we look at issues like climate change and feel like that is a pressing issue for our planet. That's something that is you know, really one of the biggest threats that our planet faces right now. And so that's where we've, you know, decided to put our efforts in and are excited to work in solidarity with so many communities and groups around the world.
Let me bring us back. Diana Buss, can you tell us a little bit about what Hold the Line is?
Definitely, yeah. Hold the Line is more of a concept than anything else, which is, you know, we talked a lot about some of the rollbacks we're seeing from the Trump administration, you know, in terms of regulation, in terms of funding for critical programs. We're also seeing sort of an aggressive move by Trump and the oil and gas industry interests that he backs in pushing forward a lot of projects like zombie pipelines, like the Keystone XL pipeline, which, of course, was a huge battle during the Obama administration, which he famously denied the federal permit for. In one of Trump's first moves, he signed an executive order sort of demanding a fast track approval of the Keystone XL pipeline. So Hold the Line is this idea that one, we're going to kind of stop a lot of these rollbacks where we can. We're going to stand up and resist them. We're going to try and hold the line on seeing a lot of rollbacks of systems and critical programs that we know we need to keep our environment and our communities, our air and our water safe. The second bit is, can we also hold the line or advance in actually moving forward and securing some progress to the climate and to our environment despite this administration? So, you know, Hold the Line is also looking at, you know, ways that we can, for example, expose the collusion and ethical violations between the oil and gas industry and some lead agency officials and some of these critical decision-making agencies like the Department of Interior or Environmental Protection Agency or even the State Department. So can we actually pull back the curtain and show that this person is conflicted from making this decision because of their relationship to oil and gas and kind of put a halt or a hurdle to that decision? So yeah, it's kind of everything. It's both responsive and it's also proactive. And that's what Hold the Line as a concept is for us at Greenpeace.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate that information. There's another question here. What are the current administration's policies on climate change?
Yeah, I can start. So I think this is an ever-moving target, so to speak. You know, we've seen everything from climate change being removed from agency websites under this administration. We've seen, you know, a lot of confusion about we've seen a lot of climate skeptics or flat out climate change deniers being appointed to kind of critical decision-making positions. You know, we've seen the oil and gas industry, former oil and gas industry cronies or people that have worked very closely with the oil and gas industry their entire career, you know, taking heads of offices that are now making a determination on how we're funding climate science, whether or not we're acknowledging the social cost of carbon and of climate change within our evaluation of sort of the price of doing business on some of these things. We're seeing people who don't believe in climate now at the head of making the regulations for how we sort of mitigate or monitor or regulate climate change causing industries. So I think the administration's policy, loosely speaking, is we're just going to ignore the reality of climate change and do what we want to pad the pockets of the oil and gas industry.
Okay. What I want to ask here is, what plans or strategic plans or tactics are you using or is Greenpeace using to deal with the Trump administration?
I can start this, but Mary, I'd certainly love for you to jump in.
Sure.
So I think, you know, I've mentioned a couple of times that kind of despite everything that's happening, I still have a lot of optimism and hope. And I think part of that is because there is such a groundswell of participation and energy, whether it's outrage or whether it's, you know, presenting a really beautiful vision of, you know, a clean, renewable energy future. There's just so much energy out there from people that want to defend the environment and want to see us move forward. I think some of the tactics or sort of strategic pathways that environmentalists are taking around the country are numerous. So one, I think people are still seeing that there's a real need to engage in state level permitting issues. So maybe the Trump administration and the federal government are sort of off doing their own thing. But for example, pipelines still need state and local approval and permitting in many places. So, you know, I think this is where that energy and that momentum on the ground, that bipartisan support to stop pipelines from being built, to stop companies from using eminent domain to build pipelines on people's private property, that's where the energy is really taking shape. And we're actually seeing a lot of movement around the country. So, for example, in Nebraska, there's a big state permit decision coming up this fall for whether or not to give the state permit to the Keystone XL pipeline, basically to give an approval to the Keystone XL pipeline to build through Nebraska. So we're seeing thousands of people coming together, landowners, people across the political spectrum really coming together and demanding of their public officials, their democratically elected officials who are charged with making this decision, to listen to the people, not to these corporate interests, and actually deny this permit. So I think state permitting is a really important piece of it. And that's where we're seeing that local momentum really taking shape. Another one I would say is I talked a bit about exposing the collusion between oil and gas and this administration. We have very clear ethical standards that are laws that you can't, for example, work for an industry, work for the federal government, pass some laws or move some policy around that directly benefits the industry you work for, then leave and go back and work for that industry once you've sort of secured your nice deal. That is against an ethical code. So we need to be exposing that as much as possible and making sure that people are held accountable to that. So that's another tactic. A final one another one is legal strategy. So Greenpeace, along with a number of indigenous and conservative groups, have actually filed a lawsuit arguing that the Trump administration's executive order to put back in territories that Obama had, you know, taken off the table for drilling. Trump signed an executive order basically reopening those spaces, that was actually illegal. So I think there's a lot of legal work that is happening right now. And then finally, I would say ground resistance. So, you know, protest risk is a real thing. It's not easy, and no company should think it's easy to just build a pipeline in people's backyards anymore. People are standing up. They are awake and aware and mobilizing and activating to make sure that these dangerous fossil fuel infrastructure projects aren't built in their communities and in their towns. And so I think ground resistance continues to be an absolutely critical part of this. Mary, did you want to add anything?
That was great. No, I think those were some really good examples of what we're seeing and what we're getting involved with. I think just to kind of underscore some of the specific examples that Diana gave, you know, Greenpeace kind of at our core, our work involves, you know, research into an issue. And so then this kind of plays out into what Diana was describing in terms of exposing some of the kind of characters that are now entering into our government who have a clear collusion with the industries that they may maybe used to work for. So there's like a research aspect to it. There's organizing. So, you know, a lot of our work involves working with local communities or with other groups across kind of all different spectrums and issues to collaborate together. And so there's opportunities coming up, at least in the offshore work, for example, where there will be public hearings where people can turn out in their communities to express their opposition or their concern about offshore drilling. And so we'll be working with those local communities to support them around the country. And then there is a piece of nonviolent direct action. So what Diana was mentioning around, you know, ground resistance, this is something that's at the core of Greenpeace's campaigning. It's, you know, even part of our origin story, nonviolent direct action, actually intervening at the place where some sort of environmental injustice is happening and working to stop it, sometimes putting our bodies on the line to do that. Sometimes that's what it takes. And so That is going to continue to be a core piece of our work, and not only kind of led by Greenpeace, but really it's being led by so many communities that are being impacted by a lot of these different projects and issues, and has been for a long time, and we'll continue to support that. And I guess a kind of a quick plug, if folks who are listening do want to get involved and learn a little bit more from Greenpeace on this and kind of some of the resources that we've put out there, we actually have a project this summer called the Summer of Resistance, where folks can actually, at about a dozen cities across the country, folks can attend a day-long workshop that Greenpeace is hosting with some local community members around nonviolent direct action and what it is as a theory and as a practice, and so that folks can actually engage a little bit more locally around some creative actions. And so if folks want to get more information, they can go to summerofresistance.org. And there's a lot of locations for where folks can actually get directly involved. And there's also a lot of material on the Greenpeace website so that, you know, it gives a little bit more background about some of the issues that we've talked about and also kind of a different way for folks to plug in. So,
do you have any dates for us? Any times and dates, that is?
For the Summer of Resistance trainings?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I do. Off the top of my head, I know that the next one this coming weekend will be in Los Angeles, both on Saturday and on Sunday. Each of them runs on Saturday and Sunday. But yeah, I'm not entirely sure of the exact times and locations for all of them. But if folks go to summerofresistance.org, it should be all laid out there, and they can RSVP directly on that page.
You also mentioned about meetings, about the oil meetings, and how can they find information about in their communities where these meetings are taking place? Do you have that information?
That's a great question. That's actually one thing that, you know, we've noticed has been a challenge, is that it sometimes is difficult for folks to get this kind of information. Often the government, even in the best circumstances, doesn't make it as apparent and clear and as well advertised as we would hope.
Right.
So I think for, if folks they can certainly follow it. We'll be posting information like that on Greenpeace's site. If they go to their local elected official, whether it's their member of Congress or their senator, they should be able to connect them to some of that information. But yeah, certainly, we'll be sharing information about when and where these hearings will be. It's likely either at the end of this year or early next year, where, coastal communities across the country, the government will be hosting these hearings, and folks can turn out to them. And I would also say, August is the August recess for Congress, where they come back to their districts, they come back to their states, and they want to engage with their constituents. And that's the time that they spend there. And so that's where there may be town hall meetings or other opportunities for people to can actually interact face-to-face with their elected officials. So if folks go on their websites, that's a good place to find that out as well.
Okay, and we have Mike, Kim, our producer online. Can you put him through for us, Ben? Mike, are you there?
Anna and Mary, thank you for being on the show. I couldn't let you ladies go without asking you a question. I saw the Saturday Night Live skit where, they were spoofing Trump, and they said, and our president will dismantle the national park system. You think that's possible? What would you actually say to Mr. Trump, our president, if you could speak to him for any amount of time?
I can take a stab at that, at least in terms of, our national parks and our national monuments. It is true that the Trump administration is reviewing almost 30 of national monuments across the country, both marine and on land. These are some of our favorite places, the natural legacy of the United States, places like near the Grand Canyon, Bears Ears National Monument, several marine monuments that are kind of incredibly unique, beautiful places across our coast. And I would say that these are public lands and waters. This is part of America's legacy that has made this country so great. And I think, you know, this is an opportunity for the American people to say, we want to protect these places for our future generations, and the Trump administration should leave them alone. Diana may have some more words.
Yes, I'd like to hear what she has to say.
I can jump in. I think Mary summarized sort of the attacks on our national park system really well. I think what I would say, you know, always the rule breakers. I would probably say what we said to Trump, you know, a few days after he took office in January, which was a giant resist banner outside the White House, which is more of a love letter to the movement saying that we've got this, we're going to hold strong, we're going to fight back against, you know, his attacks not only on the environment, but his attacks on social justice, on voting rights, on healthcare, and beyond. So I'd probably say that in just another form.
I'd like to know, what is Mr. Trump's reasoning and excuse for doing any of this? I mean, it's an attack upon monuments and natural preserves, right, that have been sacred, actually, to this country for so long. Why? What kind of reasoning can be behind anything against doing something like this?
Well, that's a good question. I think one that we are continuing to ponder over. I think Diana said it well, you know, earlier when she said a lot of these decisions seem to be made with Trump's own interest in mind, not the interest of, you know, the American people. I think.
In other words, he's a greedy bastard. That's pretty much. I mean,
you know, I think it's something to be said that, you know, on this issue, actually, 2.5 million people have weighed in to say that they do want our national monuments, our public lands and waters protected, that they're recognizing the value of these both for the cultural value that they hold and for their natural beauty. And I think, you know, that's something to be said to remind the president that, you know, people are weighing in on this and they're not going away and that they're paying attention.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can you just go over the websites and stuff? You mentioned a couple websites. Can you give those websites out just one more time before our show closes out here?
Sure. Diana, do you want to give that?
Sure. So I think there's a few places to go. First of all, I would really encourage anyone with a cell phone to text RESIST. That's RESIST to 877-877. And that way you can be plugged into any urgent rapid response moments that are happening. So we will text you if something major is happening and we need you to call your senator. We'll text you if there's sort of a major Greenpeace activity or action happening. It's a really great way to stay plugged in all the time and be sort of up to date. The other places to check out are summerofresistance.org. That's mm-hmm. our sort of activist-centered page where you can check out what activities are coming up. If there's an activity in a city near you, feel free to RSVP and join there. That will also have a handful of toolkits and petition links, so you can certainly get involved and take action even if you aren't close to one of the cities with a nonviolent direct action training happening. And the last I would just plug is our Greenpeace website. We are constantly updating it with blogs, updating on the latest activities of the Trump administration, sort of breaking down what all this means, putting it into sort of simple graphics or visuals as well. So check out greenpeace.org. I think that's it. Mary, did you want to add anything?
I think people, they can make donations, be a supporter to Greenpeace. They can also do that on the Greenpeace website as well. And you, to take action in your community, I believe you can also find that information on Greenpeace. I think international and the USA are kind of like different web pages. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So if you go to greenpeace.org in the U.S., it should automatically take you to the U.S. site. If you want to go to Greenpeace International, I just recommend going into any search engine and just typing Greenpeace International, and that will reroute you to the international site.
Well, ladies, this is the end of the show. I really appreciate the two of you. You guys brought some very great information to the table here. You guys have a good night. I want to thank all the listeners who are listening. I want to thank Don Newsom, our engineer, and Mike Kim, our producer. Let us unite through peace, love, and light. Everyone, have a good night and take care.
Thank you so
much. Thank you. You too.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief of fast, I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.